Welcome back to DougHammock.com and to our current podcast project on rethinking sex education. As you know, I try each episode to post some thoughts to help get a conversation started about working out a viable, helpful way to educate our young people about sexuality. And I want to thank the many of you who have been submitting comments and questions. I try to integrate those into future episodes, and I'll definitely gather them and compile them into a book that I'll write at the end of the project. In this second section of the project, we're asking this question: does religion have anything to offer sex education? And in these introductory episodes, before we can talk about religion's gift or what we might have to offer, we're looking at where we've gone wrong, how we lost our relevance, how we lost moral authority on the topic of sexuality. So let's begin this week's episode, the title of which is How Sex Got Dirty, (parentheses) Thanks a Lot, Plato. Now, as we've said, it's pretty clear that religion is suffering a crisis of credibility. And nowhere is this more true than the way Western Christians have approached sexuality. Where do we go wrong? How did we lose our moral authority? So let's go back into our history and see if that helps us figure out how. Because part of our problem is a long-standing religious instinct to see that sex is dirty. It wasn't always that way, but history tells us when these instincts started to creep in and started mucking up the works. And it turns out it was quite a while ago, a long time ago. We saw in the last episode, having glimpsed an elevated perspective of sexuality, that religion, and particularly Western Christianity, is often uncomfortable with the basic reality that we human beings are animals, that we carry the same sexual instincts as the animals. This idea has been a challenge for religious folks, but it hasn't always been that way. Christianity has roots deeply embedded in the Jewish world, and in the Jewish worldview, the animal nature of human sexuality just isn't a problem. Jewish tradition has a deep reverence for the physical world because, as we'll see, Judaism maintained the instincts of the earth's intrinsic goodness. They haven't lost the wisdom of our shared and ancient creation story that God breathed the universe into being and then pronounced it good, including sexuality, good. So how did the shift happen? How did it happen that Christianity, with such deep origins in Judaism, lost touch with our earlier integrated view of physicality and spirituality? Well, it happened when Christianity moved west. It happened when Christianity moved into the Greco-Roman world. That's when humans with animal sexuality became a problem. That's when sex got dirty. The Christian instinct that sex is dirty started with a journey. The trip itself is only about 1,400 miles, a little more than half the distance you'd walk if you hiked the Appalachian Trail. However, from a worldview perspective, when Christianity took this journey, we might as well have traveled across the globe. In the first century, the epicenter of Christianity moved from Jerusalem to Rome. Now, Paul played a big part in this, and as well as those straight Roman roads that you've heard about. You've heard the expression, all roads lead to Rome. Well, all those straight roads made travel easy. And Paul and the early Christians used those roads, and they carried Christianity to the whole Roman Empire, and in the process, relocated our religion's headquarters in Rome. Now, it's easy to understand why it happened. Rome was the seat of power. Rome was where all the roads led to. So, yes, it makes sense. But there was one really big unintended consequence of the move. We left one worldview, and we entered another. We moved from a Middle Eastern Hebrew worldview into a Greco-Roman Platonic one. Now, it is difficult to overemphasize how profoundly that changed the fundamental instincts that have shaped Western Christianity. And as it bears on this project, it's difficult to overestimate how profoundly our view of human sexuality changed when we moved from Jerusalem to Rome. The story of creation in the book of Genesis, it's our narrative of origins. It shapes the deep instincts that we carry inside of ourselves. It shapes the way we think about ourselves. It shapes the way we think about God. It shapes the way that we think about existence on this planet. And it shapes Jewish and Christian instincts quite differently, because Jewish people did not move west. Consequently, their way of hearing our creation story remained unaffected by Greek thought. You know the story. It begins with God speaking words and calling physical reality into being. And as each successive wave of creation unfolds, God utters a recurring refrain over it. It is good, it is good, it is good, it is good. God made the world out of God's very breath. God made the world out of God's very words, and as each successive stage unfolded, God spoke intrinsic goodness over everything. God made light and darkness and pronounced them good. God made heavens and earth and pronounced them good. God made water and dry land and pronounced them good. God made grass and seeds and trees and sun and moon and birds and fish and cattle and creeping things and man and woman along with their attached penises and vaginas. And at each stage of the process, God pronounced them all good, good, good. All of the earth and all of its earthiness is good. All of the earth and all of its space and timeness is good. People in all of their animalness and divine breathness are good. The whole affair, good, good, good. But in the first century, as Christianity moved west, it moved into a different world. A Greek world. When Christianity moved to Rome, it moved into the Greek brain. More pointedly, it moved into Plato's brain. Because Plato had, some centuries before, framed a universe for the Greeks that was made up of three layers. You can read about it in his Parable of the Cave, but here's the Cliff Notes version. Three layers of reality make up the universe. Of these, the lowest layer is the material world that you and I live in. It's the world of illusory shapes that we think is the real world, but it's not really, Plato says. It's the world of mere shadows and shapes. The physical world, the material world, is a derivative expression of a better reality that exists somewhere else. And it's in this other reality layer that the real stuff exists. So, real horses and real pigs and real trees and real houses, they do exist, but they don't exist in a length and width and height kind of way. Physical pigs and physical trees and houses are a copy of a more real version that exists somewhere else, out there somewhere. That's what Plato taught. So, stuff exists in its truest form in a second layer of reality. It exists in a non-material, non-physical place. So, real horses and real pigs and trees and houses exist in their most real way in the non-material realm of ideas. So, the pure, non-physical idea of a house is the real house. The pure, non-physical idea of a tree, that's the truest version of the house, that's the truest version of the tree. Now, the material world that you and I live in is like a copy of a copy of a copy. It's a derivative reduction of the true, non-physical form of things. So, that's the universe that Plato taught the Greeks, and that the Greeks taught the Romans. It was divided into these layers. The lowest is the material world, the derivative copy. The next layer up is the world of non-material, abstract, conceptual ideas of reality. He called this layer the realm of forms. And the highest layer, the highest form, Plato called it, is what he called the good. It sits atop all the layers as the utmost expression of reality. So, when Christianity moved west, the most natural thing in the world was for them to translate our story into a framework that the Western mind could relate to. So, we took up the idea of the material world being a reductionist, less real, less important layer. We translated Christianity into Plato's three-tiered universe. The earth became less important because it was Plato's diminished realm of illusion. It had taken this high place in the Jewish world, but it got into motion. Heaven, on the other hand, became a lot more important than it had been because it became Plato's realm of forms, the place where disembodied spirits live, somewhere out there. And above it all is God, the highest form, what Plato called the good. So all the important stuff became non-physical, and all the physical stuff became unimportant. It was a perfect way to adapt to the new worldview, the same three layers, but now they're Christian layers. And now the Greco-Roman mind could grasp the Christian story, and that's what happened in the first and second centuries. Christians took up the Platonic idea that the material world is a lesser derivative reality, and the non-material world, the spirit world, is the realist reality. We moved into Plato's universe, and we moved out of Jesus' universe, out of a material world that is holy and sacred, out of a material world made of God's very breath, and we moved into a world where physicalness is lesser, physicalness is derivative. When that happened, the idea that God is present in rocks, in trees, and in the smell of a child, and in the bodies of our lovers, the idea that divine presence is in and around and of everything, that story became harder to tell, so we stopped telling it. And sexuality, about the most physical of all the physical things, hit some really hard times after that move. Religion and sex started being at odds with one another. That's when, for Western Christians, sexuality took a hard turn toward the dirty. Now, we can see this happening by watching how the interpretation of the Song of Songs, or you might have grown up calling it the Song of Solomon, we can see how that interpretation changed over time. The Song of Songs is part of Hebrew wisdom scriptures. You can find it near the middle of the Bible. And being Hebrew, it was written in a context that was quite comfortable with sexuality. Remember, it is good, it is good, it is good. Sexuality included, it is good. So right there in the middle of the Bible is an erotic poem. What? Yes, really, it's there. There's an erotic poem about the fiery passion of a young man for a young woman. Now, in this poem, this young man longs for his beloved. He longs for her companionship. He longs for her body. He longs for her touch. He marvels at the beauty of her face and her eyes and her neck and her breasts. He is enthralled by the beauty of her physicalness. In verse, he speaks of his deep desire to experience her fully. He wants to share with her the deepest intimacy two people can experience, loving and close and physical and erotic. Poetry gets pretty graphic along the way. In a class I had in graduate school, I had a professor who walked through the book in the original Hebrew language line by line, and he could do this from memory. He did it with no notes. I was really impressed. But one line stood out in my memory because it shocked me. As the professor was translating on the fly, he noted a euphemistic line about the young man's anticipation of the smell of her garden. This, the professor said, based on this and that and this other thing, this is a reference to this young man's anticipation of the smell of his beloved's arousal. In other words, there is a scent that is associated with a sexually aroused woman, and this young man has heard about it. And his tribe and his people had told him about it and led him to anticipate it with great desire, and he can't wait to experience the scent and all the pleasures that go with it. Smack in the middle of our Hebrew scriptures is a celebration of erotic desire, erotic longing, erotic yearning, a celebration of physical pleasure, a celebration of sexual hunger. But if you grew up in the church I grew up in, when I grew up in it, here's what you would have learned about the Song of Songs. This isn't erotic literature, not by a long shot. No, the whole book is a great big allegory. Great big metaphor. In it, the young man is God, and the young woman is the Christian church. It is a poem about how much God loves the church. Gone was anything erotic. Gone was anything sexual or sensual, and its place was something apocalyptic. It's really a prophecy about the end of time. When the world is over, or when our lives are over, we will get away from this derivative physical world, and we will join God, the highest good, in a non-physical place that we call heaven. And there we will have a great big feast, a wedding feast with God, and we will be joined in the greatest intimacy with God. So, as our scriptures made the trip from Jerusalem to Rome, the book stopped being erotic. Instead, it became about the day coming in the distant future when God will consummate our deepest spiritual, not physical, but spiritual desires. And it will happen out there, in the realm of non-physicality. It'll happen sometime at the end of time when, in disembodied, non-material purity, with no pesky animal bodies to muck up the works, we will experience a pure expression of the highest good. So, a celebration of eroticism, a celebration of physicality, a celebration of sexual yearning became disembodied, non-sexual, and ethereal. And so how did that happen? Why did that happen? happened because sex, along with the rest of the material world, got dirty when we moved west. And sex got dirty because the material world got dirty. Of course we couldn't have erotic literature in the Bible. That's shameful. The physical world had stopped being good, and the way God made it from the beginning stopped being good. Instead, it had become derivative and illusory and corrupt, the way Plato made it. Christian sex got dirty, not because sex is dirty. Christian sex got dirty because it was so physical. Now, it's not the point for this podcast, but it wasn't just sex that got dirty. So did food. We started practicing long, brutal fasts. We were working to deny ourselves the physical pleasure of food. Sleep got dirty. Truly spiritual people denied themselves the physical pleasure of sleep, and they prayed through the night hours. Vigils is what we called them. Physical comfort got dirty. Spiritual people wore horsehair shirts in order to suppress their desire for comfort because it was so itchy and scratchy when they wore that. They even whipped themselves to try and dominate their physicality. And even worse, over the long haul, it became a Christian instinct to dominate and to mistreat the material world because it's derivative. Who cares? It's just physical. It's just material. It's all going to burn up one day anyway when we escape the confines of physicality and we travel to that non-material world of heaven. And so we developed a really toxic instinct, a Christian disregard for environmentalism. It was our instinct to dominate or to use or to exploit or to overrun the physical, the material world. So really, thanks a lot, Plato. Plato introduced ideas that gave a hard turn to Western Christianity. And in the process, sex got dirty. So, of course, we had to rewrite Song of Songs in our minds. Eroticism couldn't be okay. Sexual yearning is suspect at best. Most likely, it's just bad. Now, we'll see in future episodes that Christian tradition has discerned some really powerful and life-giving insights into human sexuality through the centuries. But in the mix, we have also carried this deep Platonic infection, and we've carried it for a long time. And it has given us some very negative views of sexuality, some negative views of pleasure, of erotic drives, and particularly negative views of women. It has given us a tendency to suppress rather than to channel our sexual energies. Dirty sex is a result of the tragic reduction of Western Christianity to fit into a Platonic worldview. It was a big step back from an elevated vision of sexuality, a big step back from transformative sexuality. Was a closed door to the life and to the power and vitality that can only be described as divine. For many generations of Christians, sex has been reduced to an inconvenience at best, for some, a necessary evil so we can have children. It was a tragedy. And in our reductionist, reactionary posture, our instincts have often worked really hard not to be animals. We have worked really hard to suppress physical desire. We made our religion and our spirituality an effort to transcend physicality, and especially sexuality. Instead of finding God and love and creativity and the sacred within our sexuality, we taught our young people to suppress their animal energies. And then we shamed them when they couldn't do it. We taught them that they were bad if they did not suppress this wild and powerful and divine energy that was inside of them. And that is a tragic departure from the message of our scriptures, because sexuality and all of the earth and all of its earthiness, it is good, it is good, it is good, it is good. All right, we'll pick up here in the next episode. In the meantime, I'd really love to hear from you. I'd like to know what you think religion has to offer our society's quest for a sex ed curriculum that works. What do you think? Let me know.